I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni, and super excited to have you on as always. But today we're going to really dive into conveying your message to different audiences and what that takes, because there are a lot of you out there who have a set of skills that are obviously beneficial to a particular audience or a particular niche, and then it opens up that a lot of other doors and you end up speaking to different audiences. So I think we'll get some awesome insight from our guest today, as well as some of the, you know, the transitions that have happened over the last year or so into conveying that message. You know, as a lot of us know, we've all been moved from a lot of in-person to online and had to pivot and change. So with all that being said, I'd love to welcome to the show Mike Demish, who is the founder of Paid Speaker Accelerator, and he is our amazing guest today. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Victor. Looking forward to this discussion.
So you're from the Paid Center, a Paid Speaker Accelerator, but also from the Center of Respect. Give us a little bit of a background about where that the Center of Respect came from, and I guess what it is, and how it all ties into the world of speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in 1989, I received a phone call while I was in college that my sister had been raped. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was appalled. I was furious. I was angry. I was lost. I was confused. And about 6 months later, I would hear a speaker and I realized, wait, I can do something about this. At the time, I was 20, 21 years old, and I started speaking. I started speaking in schools. And then what would happen is about 10 years later, I'd go to speaking full time, speaking in middle schools, high schools. Now in the United States, that means sixth grade through 12th grade. And then I would speak in universities, and the U.S. military came to me and said, hey, can you do this for us? And we started speaking in the U.S. military, and then companies, organizations, corporations said, hey, can you do this for us? And that's where it's really grown and exploded over the years, is each market. I were still to this day, I work with all of those different groups. So in the same day, I can be speaking to a 12-year-old in school, and later that afternoon speaking to generals or admirals in the U.S. military. So the diversity in our audiences is awesome, and it's wonderful because it creates a really wide variety of opportunity for us to create positive impact in this world.
It's awesome. And I mean, it's like I was saying in the intro, it's just one of those, a lot of, I guess the North American saying is there's riches in the niches. We call it niches in down south, so in the Southern Hemisphere, so it doesn't really work quite as well. But it's, yeah, a lot of speakers, they'll start out, and they'll be speaking, like you said, into the schools, and then, or not necessarily into the schools, but to one particular organization or one particular group, and then it kind of unfolds. How did did you have to evolve your message? You said you started off at these younger schools and then universities and then through to organizations. Obviously a bit of fear and trepidation stepping out into the next ones, I'm imagining, but how did you manage to move that message and share it so it was understood by each of those groups?
Yeah, well, the key was, in those situations, there's two elements. One, you have to be age appropriateness and understand the relationship level the people are at in their lives. So I'm not going to say the same thing to a 12-year-old that I'm going to say to a 23-year-old about sex, relationships, consent, respect, boundaries. It's a very different conversation. So you have to know how to know the audience you're working with and what they need in that moment and what they can relate to and understand. And that's really key, Victor, to all audiences, is knowing what have they experienced that they can relate to. So many people make the mistake of thinking everybody needs to hear my message, and they give their message the same way to everybody, but every audience has different experiences. So some are not going to relate to the one story you have, and others, that story is going to hit home perfectly. So you have to know where to use what story, where to use what conversation. And the second element, and this is critically important that most people don't do, is I let my audiences drive the conversation. So it's never about me. I'm asking questions that they're answering. And by them answering, they're telling me where they're at, what they need, where they struggle. And then I just drive the conversation down that road. So I don't come in with this, hey, I know exactly what they're experiencing. I know what you're going through. I ask, hey, is this situation, I'll name exact situation, does it go this way or that way? And they'll all be like, it goes that way. All right, let's talk about why it goes that way. So it's their words. They get to really own the conversation. And it's not about me knowing it all, which a lot of speakers can accidentally come off as I'm the guru, I'm the expert, versus tell me your world and let's talk about that.
It's really interesting. I want to touch on a couple of those points because I think it's a skill that I don't see a lot of. I mean, you see, say someone like Gary Vee when he's speaking, he'll speak for a little bit and then he'll just open up the floor and just kind of ad lib to a degree and let his audience guide it, which is, you know, people, I guess, love to that degree because it's like, oh, wow, this isn't just some canned kind of response. And on that note, it's like, you know, if you're speaking to those 12-year-old girls, and this doesn't really even just matter if it's you speaking to 12-year-old girls, but anyone who's on a stage as a perceived authority, it's often hard if you don't find a way to make yourself relatable to the audience. You know, if you've made $10 million in your business and you're speaking to people who are making $50,000 a year, they're going, oh, that could never be me. And yeah, it's really, really hard for them to relate unless you know, potentially give that kind of rags to riches story or show that you'd been in their position. And I think, yeah, just from hearing what you've said, I think for a lot of people out there who are potentially going, oh, God, yeah, how am I going to be able to relate to this audience, is let them guide the conversation and guide your presentation, I guess, to a degree.
Well, here's the key to that most people don't realize. It sounds easier than it is. Like people think, oh, I just ask the audience a question, they answer, and I go there. However, to actually be able to drive it where it needs to go, you actually have to be an expert in the topic. And Victor, as you know, there are people who come up and go, what's the hot topic right now? What should I be speaking on? And I always tell them, you shouldn't be speaking if you're asking me that question, honestly, because that tells me you're not speaking to a place of expertise. You're speaking just to fill a money void. And the problem with that is people will expose you for the lack of expertise you have. So stick to what you know. Give your expertise. And that's why you're able to niche your niche, as you said, in your part of the world. You're able to do that if you're an expert. That allows you to do that in all different groups with the same niche, It allows you to do that. And that's the critical piece. No matter what the audience says, because of my expertise, I am able to respond to that and direct it in a way that is productive for everybody in the room. If I was not an expert, and they said something, I said, let's go over here. I could say something harmful that I'm not even aware of that could do damage to the topic, to people in the room. It could create toxicity, and or somebody in the room could have more actual expertise and know you're a fake. Mm. And so I always tell people, imagine the person hiring you has a doctorate on your topic. Would they still hire you? Would they know that you don't know what you're talking about? Because that should tell you, get out of that. Don't talk about that. Talk about what you know, what you bring perspective and expertise others don't bring. And I don't mean you need to be a doctorate. I want to be very clear. I don't have a doctorate. I have a bachelor's degree. I have a basic university degree. But do you bring a level of expertise, insight, and perspective and experience that others do not bring to that room or aren't able to bring it as effectively as you're able to bring it potentially?
And here's the thing, I'd be interested in your thoughts as well, is having that level of expertise or having any level of expertise generally leads you, unless you're a poorly trained speaker, which is a kind of different point. But being an expert generally allows you the ability to simplify things down. So even though there may be that person with the doctorate in the audience, you're not worried if they fire you a question or someone else who's an expert in the audience, you're comfortable to go to that level, but then you're also got the ability to be able to not dumb down, but like you said, change your message for the 12-year-olds versus the admirals. You'll be able to change that level due to your expertise and your knowledge around that area.
Yeah, people pay for two things, clarity and results. That's what we're hired to create when we speak. And clarity is a huge piece that people don't talk about in our industry. It's a big piece of what you're paid for, is that you keep it clear, understandable, and actionable. Now, the results come out of it being actionable. And what a lot of people do is they come in and they raise awareness in a talk, and it's highly ineffective at becoming actionable. So let me give an example that you gave, Victor, earlier. The person who comes in the room goes, I make $1 million a week, or I make $1 million a month. And here's my rag to riches story. And they connect to you on the rag side, right? They say, I was just like you. I struggled here, but now I'm here. But they don't actually give you reasonable, actionable skill sets that you use to get from rags to riches. And so you sit there and you go, well, that's great, but I'm never going to be them. I don't have their charisma. I don't have their this. I don't have their that. Yeah, you're sitting there saying that because they didn't give you actionable skill sets that you walked out and going, oh, I got to do this now. I got to do this now. That's the difference maker. And I say to everybody who asks me, you know, and I run the Paid Speaker Accelerator, what happened was people saw us doing this and said, how do you do what you do? You know, just like you do with what you're doing, Victor. And we said, hey, we've created this program called Paid Speaker Accelerator. And here's one of the key lessons that everybody has to learn how to be able to do. And that is, how do you present your topic in a way that the audience wants to take the action and that you provided the action, the skill set so simple that they don't need to ask you questions afterwards, that they are ready to implement it right now when they walk out of the room. And that's what people pay for, skill sets that their audience is implementing. So in my case, when people are walking out of the room going, I can't wait to ask first and then respect the answer. That is massive because they weren't doing that before. And now they're looking forward to doing it. If it was a salesperson and you're a sales speaker and everybody walking out of the room is going, oh, right now I want to get on my phone and use that skill they just taught right now. I got to use that right now. That's what people pay for. That's actionable skill sets. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They think, oh, you know what? After today, my audience realizes they have the ability to do things. Yeah, of course you should have taught that as a speaker, but what did you teach them how to do with that ability? That's the key. If you just raise confidence and give them no skill, they leave the room and like, I can't wait to, but then they get lost or overwhelmed and they never do anything because you lacked the clarity of actionable skill sets.
It's 100%. I mean, I call it the one overarching message. I was like, start your presentation when you're planning it with what you want the person to walk away and be able to take action on. And if you can, if you can do that with your audience, then, you know, more opportunities are going to keep coming their way. And speaking on the, I guess the back end of the public speaking and the presenting and things that you do, I love to ask my guests and get a bit of an idea of, I call it the Trojan horse method, as in you speak at, say, one organization and you use it as an in. It may be a keynote presentation that you're giving, it may be a workshop that you're giving, and then you use that to be able to work. You know, you give that keynote presentation, then you're able to sit down or impress some decision makers, and then you offer them a workshop or you offer them ongoing consulting and things like that. Is that something that you've done throughout your speaking? And if you have, how's that kind of evolved?
So yes, and yes, and yes. In fact, that's how I taught people that I really exploded our work and the level of demand there was for the work. Early on, when I was just getting started, I was at every conference. I was doing breakout sessions because they didn't know me yet enough to put me as a keynote speaker back in the day. And I would do breakout sessions. And during those breakout sessions, what I would do is at the end of it, I'd be like, hey, if you'd like to bring me your organization, I'm doing a little giveaway here today. Just fill out that giveaway form. And I'd make sure the giveaway is something they really wanted. I'll just fill out that form and I'll reach out to you. And we get all these forms saying, hey, I really would love to bring you to our school or organization. And that suddenly I'd go to one conference and have 15 events afterwards. And what I would do, and this is key, Victor, is I would pay attention closely to which conferences drew that response and which didn't. So I wasn't going to every conference anymore. I did that for the first year or so. And then I saw which ones were highly effective for my topic and what I do, which were not. And I would make sure I'd focus on the ones that were, because that's the audience I'm going to love being with, the audience that cares about the topic. And that's who I want to work with. And that was really key. And still to this day, I'll do conferences where the people in the room care deeply about the mission and the results we're trying to bring to the world. And I love doing those conferences. So yes, absolutely.
It's brilliant. And I mean, that's, yeah, for people out there, it's a massive lesson. Like, there's gems like this in every episode, but it's those, yeah, a lot of different speakers and trainers that we've had on, they've all had their own different, I guess, Trojan horse of, yeah, I know one person said that they'll half their speaking fee if they can have lunch with the CEO of whatever company. And yeah, because they were saying, oh yeah, we can't afford whatever it was, 10 grand. Say, okay, well, maybe I could do it for five. And if you can get me a sit down with these couple of people, and then those couple of people obviously were like, yeah, we'd love you to take our C-level executives for, you know, a seminar or something. Can it, you know, that $5,000 that he took off ended up in being like, you know, $50,000 more in business. And it meant he wasn't traveling across the country to go to another conference or another keynote presentation, which is, yeah, a super powerful lesson. And I think, yeah, exactly what you said, being able to, yeah, a great lesson that I'll definitely take on board is that offer. Yeah, it's a brilliant way to find out who are these people who are interested in what you're offering. Yeah, you're getting.
Yeah, here's what it was. It was a little piece of paper back in the day. Now I do it on an online survey, and I still do it on an online survey at all my events. By the way, I have a way for my audience to give me leads right there at the end of my program. But the back in the day, it was a little piece of paper, little, you know, like 4x4 piece of paper that said name, email, address, what you took away from today. And then would you be interested in having Mike speak for your organization? It would say yes, maybe no. So the no's we're not going to reach out to. I don't want to waste their time. But any maybe or yes, within 24 hours, they had an email from me. And this was so important. People don't get that if somebody tells you they're interested in you, you don't wait to follow up with them. I always tell people the line that I always use as my message is, don't let them stop loving you. If they move on to the next one, they're going to fall in love with the next one while they forgot about you potentially. It doesn't mean you were amazing. It's just they might see 3-4 great programs in a day and forget who did what by name. Like, they remember your message. They remember how powerful it was. And they're going, which speaker was that? That can happen. People can have that memory loss of overwhelm. It doesn't mean you did anything wrong. So don't let them forget that who they loved. Reach out to them. Say, hey, thank you so much for coming to my session. It meant the world that you said you'd be interested in having me. Here's a little something extra I wanted to send you that I didn't share in the program. And when would be a good time to talk about potentially working together? Within 24 hours. It's huge, Victor.
It's powerful. Yeah, 24 hours, strike while the iron's hot. That's transitioning into that. Obviously, the last year has been a interesting one, to say the least, worldwide. With obviously a lot of your speaking in the past, I'm assuming was in person. What's happened, or what's changed, or what's evolved in the speaking side of things for you over the last 12 to 14 months?
Yeah. So what happened when everything took place? Obviously, as you know, everything just stopped overnight. And I was on the road at the time. It was early March. Well, March and April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is the topic I talk about. So it's one of our busiest months of the year. And it's one of the critical months for people doing programs and trying to help people. And so suddenly all of that was gone. We lost a huge, huge percentage of our year overnight. And what happened is people said to me, hey, Mike, you're a live on-site speaker. And because of your interaction and because of your energy, people aren't going to hire you virtual. They want you in the room. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? What's going to happen? And so I was in that worry mode, but I was doing everything I could to learn Zoom. I mean, everything. I was doing practice, fake meetings just with my, like I'd log into different devices and have my own, myself and my own meetings practicing stuff. And then I saw a webinar of a speaker and I thought, really? That's all they're doing? Well, I can do that. I mean, that's literally what I thought, Victor. I'm like, that's all? That's, I can do that. And so I scheduled a free webinar. Now, I'd never done that in the past. So I was never drawing my own audiences. I was always being hired to show up and speak to 200 or 5,000, but I didn't run my own events. So I ran my own webinar and I thought, oh, geez, let's just hope we get, you know, 50 people on this thing, at least 100. And 500 people registered. And 400 attended. Now, those who know the free webinar world knows that's pretty unheard of for 80% to actually show up for the live event. And what it was I did a live event focused on a major problem and struggle that people in the industry have. And I just shared. And I was myself, I was super high energy. I was engaging people. I was like, hey, let's blah, blah, blah. Talking John, Julie, Jordan, blah, blah. And using their names and using the chat. And people were like, best webinar ever. And that's where we were getting this feedback. And they were like, that was amazing. How do I get you to do this for my organization? And that then we did a paid one 2 weeks later and still had 100 people on it for the paid one. And we're like, all right, we have gotten this down. We have figured out how to really engage people virtually. And what happened was my clients were on the free one too, because they were like, hey, let's check this out. Just see what Mike's doing. And when they saw it, they were like, we're not worried about you. And we had all these events scheduled for August and September. We only lost a handful of the many, many we had scheduled because they got to see it. They got to test how I work live virtually. And then when we did their live virtual events in the fall, they were like, this so works. Some of them, even though they can go to live on site, are keeping me live virtual because they actually, as much as they love my in on-site energy, they're like, some of the students loved how personal it could be from their one-on-one computers. So we're going to keep you live virtual. And so it's been a fascinating experience. The biggest shift I've seen, Victor, is when I was live on site, I always got booked for one of my programs. One of my, you know, titled programs that everybody knew. Oh, there's Mike's Candy Kitchen program. There's the Missionist Transformation program. Mike, we're hiring you to do that. Now with live virtual, they're saying, hey, Mike, we want you for 2 hours. It's not about which program I'm giving. They're just like, we know we want you. We want you for 2 hours. Here's our audience. Do your thing. So it's a lot of variety that I get to create based on who's in the room, not on a pre-standardized program they necessarily want, you know, that as far as it's a cookie cutter. Hey, we've seen that. We want that exact program again. Now they're like, since it's virtual, just do what you do with the people online, whether it's 100 people, 10 or, you know, 2,000 from around the world. We know that you'll just flow with what's needed in the room and they trust that. So it's really, I thought I would hate virtual because I'm all about interaction with the audience. I love it. So now I still am doing live on site and I'm doing live virtual and it's a nice mix and there's a different energy. It's just, I wish it didn't happen the way it happened, Victor. That's for sure. I wish there was a way this could have happened without COVID ever impacting our world the way it did. And where we are at in our industry, as far as doing live virtual, I am grateful for the amount of people we are able to reach because of live virtual. It's been incredible.
It's it's amazing. It's you know, well done on the proving that it wouldn't work, which obviously it did. And yeah, the person who said to you, what you do won't work and on virtual and those sorts of things, and then actually testing it and seeing it, and then obviously seeing that it does work, because that's the power of it. I mean, I did one of Tony Robbins, his UPW. I'd done it maybe five or six years ago, and then he ran it virtually, and I did it with my fiance, but I was just really interested to see how do you recreate basically a nightclub atmosphere with 5,000 people in an indoor stadium virtually.
But I want to talk about that, Victor, because that's a really important factor to discuss what you're bringing up. So I hate to interrupt, but I think the Tony Robbins phenomenon is actually scaring some speakers from speaking. they are seeing the Tony Robbins setup. And there's a few others doing what Tony Robbins is doing, 360 round, $5 million studios, where they're using 100 different computer login meetings, and everybody's having this incredible experience they could have never have had without this technology. And speakers are seeing this and going, I have two cameras, my phone and a webcam. I have four lights in my studio. I can't do that. So therefore I can't be effective. And this goes back to expertise and ability to interact. And I just want to stress to everybody listening, you don't need any of that. You just don't need it. And so it's awesome that Tony's doing what Tony's doing. All credit in the world. And you don't need that. That's not you. You're not Tony Robbins. So look at, I mean, you can see it, Victor. You can see video, but everybody listening can't. I have a very basic setup here. I have a two camera shoot. I can go to standing to sitting. I have some transitions that you don't see me move during that time between the cameras, and I can do that. But I don't even green, my clients don't want it. I don't green screen. I painted my walls behind me colors that work with me, that work with my eyes, all of that. And I have a very basic setup that's well lit that allows me to be one-on-one with the audience. And so I just want to stress to everybody watching, yes, attend those events to see what they're like and think, how can I be that more interactive in just my one-on-one energy with an audience without needing all of this, without needing all of that glamour? Because the issue is really this. If you are an expert who knows how to convey a message and knows how to interact with human beings, a camera in you is what you need. That's what you need. If you understand that.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with that. And what I was going to say from the Tony side of things is I'd heard he thought he was going to be out of doing events for a year or two until things open back up, because he's like, oh, what I do is too high energy, or you know, it's too much of an experiential thing that I can't do it online. And it wasn't until he saw, I think it was Pete Vargas's event, that he's like, oh, well, actually, maybe I can do this. But I mean, the end of the day, exactly what you said. You don't need the $5 million studio. You don't need all of this. I mean, the reality is most people, even if you can put on a live event, you're not going to put on a live event in person like Tony Robbins does anyway. So yeah, there's no point.
That's right.
There's no point chasing that. There's no point chasing that.
I love that point, Victor, that you weren't him before. Why are you trying to be him now? Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a beautiful point you just said, Victor. That's so, so important for people to hear. And let me be clear. This is a part that people need to be honest about. When people told me that last March, April, I believed them because it sounded logical. Yeah. Just like Tony Robbins thought, oh no, I'm in trouble, because it sounds logical to believe that. It's logical until you've had experience of success. And that's why for everybody listening, you just got to do it. You just got to get out there and do it and find out where your energy works. And look, the first time I did it, I didn't have any of this technology that I use now. Now I use programs like Ecamm and Stream Deck, and I can switch from scene to scene, and I can do some cool technology. I was just using PowerPoint share screen and then pop out of that and be back to full screen. That's how I did the first one. It was the most basic technology of Zoom imaginable. And Zoom has advanced itself over the past year tremendously. So it just do it. Just get out there and solve problems for people and then see where you have the opportunity to do that in a way that they that you can solve a problem they're willing to pay for, that's really a value to them.
Yep. If you could do it well in person, you can probably do it, or you can definitely do it well online. If you want it.
Yes. And what it does expose is if you're a script, you ain't going to make it as much online. Yep. So if you are not an expert, but you know how to, you learned and researched topics, so you could write a script for a speech, and that's a speech you used to give on stages, you will be exposed live virtually, because people have the ability to chat while you talk. And our audiences didn't talk while we talked when you're live on site. Now live virtually, they'll be like, well, that's bogus. That's not true. Or I have found that that's not, and which is awesome, because if you're an expert, you'll go, hey, Julie, let's talk about that comment. And you'll be totally comfortable with it. If you're not an expert, you often will ignore it or become defensive. And the audience will turn on you because they do know what the person is saying is right or wrong.
Yep. And they've got Google even more handy.
That's right.
They're not feeling bad. Exactly. They're not feeling bad Googling it like they may in a live seminar. But that's awesome. So just to wind up, because there's a lot, I think, for a lot of speakers to unpack. And saying all of this about virtual, I just have to say that about an hour ago, I locked in my first in-person live international presentation. In a couple of months. That's just because I'm in Australia and New Zealand and Australian borders open in 2 weeks' time. It got announced today. And so something I'd had lined up is now going to be in person. And I get to go home and visit family. So
Hey, I will tell you this. I was, to be fair, I've been doing live on site my first live on site was last August. And I did them in August, I did them September, and I've done a bunch between January and now, live on site, like a few a month. Now I'm doing way more live virtual, but live on site. And it's been interesting, this is really important for people to understand, how the live on sites are changing too. Because when you do a live on site, how they set up the room, and this is important for everybody to understand, you might wish you were live virtual. Mm. And so you need to think about, when people are 6 feet apart wearing a mask, what's going to happen to the energy in the room? What's going to happen to their connectedness when they used to be shoulder to shoulder and they felt a connection to each other? What happens when they're 6 feet apart? Will they answer through a mask the way they would answer with no mask? I can answer all these questions to you. Everybody who's been doing live on site will tell you the same. The energy is different. People don't like responding through a mask the way they did when there was no mask. And by the way, I am somebody who believes wear the mask. We need to do the right thing for everybody's health and safety. But we also have to understand how this is impacting your audiences. So when you're live on site, you've got to really bring the energy. You've got to be willing to say, turn to the person 6 feet behind you. Don't move. Have a 6 foot long conversation, because they need to talk to somebody, because they're less likely to talk as an audience, as a group at once to you, because of those masks being on, because of them being 6 feet apart. Now, I've also done events where everybody's still sitting together because they're in a bubble. And because they live in a bubble, they're allowed to do that. So they're in a mask and they're sitting right next to each other. And the energy is right back to where it was before this ever happened. So we all have to contemplate how that's going to impact when you get live on site, your room setup. I've had people say, we're going to put 500 people in an arena of 6,000. And they're going to be spread out through the whole arena and you're going to be at one end. And I told that client, I believe we'll get way more results if we just do this live virtually. And then when they saw it, they're like, totally makes sense what you're saying. You one-on-one on their screen is way more personal than you at the other end of an arena and nobody sitting next to them. So be willing to talk to clients about what's your setup. Does it make sense for us to do this on site for me? Or would you rather me do this live virtual and be really personal with everybody in the room? But it really depends on the setup.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing, because a lot of that obviously is important for 99% of the world. And then I'm just in this little like New Zealand, or I'm in Australia, but in this Australia, New Zealand bubble where I was playing, you know, full, and we're in a little mini lockdown at the moment. We had 3 days of isolation and then we're having 2 weeks of wearing a mask, but I've worn a mask for 3 weeks in total since this whole thing. And I'm not anti-masks. It's just, we've just been very, very fortunate in the way it's been handled. And like life has been pretty much normal since June or July last year, for the most part here. So it's interesting hearing that insight, because I mean, for a lot of us, we are going to end up eventually back overseas, or just to understand what's going on with these 6 feet apart and everything like that. Because yeah, when it's out of sight, out of mind for the most part, yeah, we heard all the news of how the rest of the world was faring, and then you don't hear about it as much, and then you just forget about it almost to a degree, which is it's interesting hearing that on your end.
Yeah, and very few speakers are doing live on site, including here in the United States. It is still not happening frequently, so they haven't experienced it yet. And they're all like, can't wait to get back in the room. And I'm always like, well, I'm in the room. Just be warned, it ain't the same room. So if they're doing all of that separation. Now, some are not, because some organizations exist in a bubble, they do it differently. But I mean, it's even different this way, Victor. Imagine that you're live on site, and you're wearing the mask until you start speaking. You take it off. As soon as you're done, the mask is back on. And people might have been told, don't go up and have one-on-ones.
So the worst thing possible. Come up to you,
yeah, the same people that come up to you and talk to you afterwards, don't do it. So now you have to really make sure, here's how to get a hold of me, because they've been told not to get that close to you, you know? So it's everything's different. If you used to give people hugs and handshakes, now they might bump the elbow. You know, that's a very common maneuver of hello when people are masked right now. So it's just little things that create a different energy. You just got to be ready for it. That's the key.
Yeah, it's good insight, because I mean, a lot of those connections that you make after the event are those kind of hot leads that you're talking about. Yeah, they're the people who are actually going to take action on what you're talking about, but they're also going to either hire you or sign up to something that you're offering or recommend you to their organization or whatever through that extra 20, 30 minute conversation that you have in a circle out the back afterwards or whatever it is. So yeah, it definitely changes the dynamic. Look, I know your time is very valuable, even though we've cut out a lot of the travel with the world of this online side of things. But obviously, you've got your paid speaker accelerator, and I'm interested to hear a little bit about that. But from the paid speaking side of things, how have you found it in putting your prices forward for different speaking engagements that you are doing when it's been at the live in person versus the virtual?
Yeah. So what I did when this was happening right away with my clients, I'd get on with them and show them a test run of how we're going to run their event. Or if before they even booking it, or a lot of my clients were, remember I said, were booked prior to COVID happening, but then stayed with us.
Yep.
Or if somebody was not booked, I would meet them on Zoom, where maybe in the past it would have been a phone call. I was very intentional to say, can we set up a Zoom?
Yep.
When we would be on Zoom, now you can see it right now, Victor, that they can see all this banners and all that I have on my screen that you can't do in Zoom. It's from Zoom itself. You need some other production quality. And so they would see that and they're going, how are you doing that? And I'd say, well, like, here's how the visuals will move. And I would move slides from without touching, sharing screen or any of that. And they're like, how are you doing all this? And I'm like, well, that's what I'm going to do for you. So here's why that's important, Victor. They would see all the work that is involved in live virtual. And I would say to them, you can see that, I would say to them literally, as you can see, this is more work, prep, everything live virtual than it is on live on site to walk onto a stage and talk. And they would always agree because it's honest. They'd be like, yeah, that's clearly more work. And then, so I'm not going to charge you more for the more work. So my fees remained the same, and or I removed travel. That's how we operate, and we continue to operate to this day. So here's my live on site fee, and that's where we adjust it. We adjust it by removing the travel. So here's my live on site fee. Here's my live virtual. The difference is travel. That's it. Because they realize I'm going to bring everything I've got, just like I would live on site, to that live virtual event. And I'm going to be able to reach maybe even more people on the live virtual than we could have on the live on site. So that's what's worked for us. Now, I want to be very clear about this. There are people that have struggled to make that work. You got to do what works for you. So I'm not trying to act like, oh, because it worked for me, you can do the same thing. People have to do what works for them and their livelihood and their families and their financial situation. If you can't do that, I understand. If you are able to convey that and your clients trust you, look, they believed in your value before COVID. And if they're still working with you, they probably believe in it during COVID. The difference will be, do they still have the budget? And that kind of have an influence, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so much, you know, obviously the budget plays a part, but you've already given, I think, a lot of the people out there listening an insight into how you can still position your expertise, not the hired gun time for money. Because I think that's where a lot of people, not just speakers, are really having, I guess, both real and internal conflict with how can I charge the same when I'm not in person? But I mean, like you say, there's more work to do. You're now the tech guy. You're doing sound and lighting and cameras and slides, and you've got to manage any breakdowns in and amongst that as well. And you're still, you know, ideally, if you're good at what you do, which obviously you are, you're being able to create a transformation and give people an actionable step to take after your presentation. So, yeah, the result is the same.
I want to share something. I know we're getting towards the end here. I want to make sure I share this. You better be able to prove your results. So here's what I've been doing this for over a decade. In all my programs, I survey the audience in the last 5 minutes. So when we went live virtual, I kept doing that. And what I was able to do, Victor, is show the client, here were your results a year ago, live on site. Here are your results, live virtual. And they were like, oh my gosh, we're hitting the same numbers. We're hitting the same percentage of answers live virtual as we are live on site. And that was a game changer. They were like, wow, because you're able to prove results. Otherwise, people are like, I'm just as good live virtual as I live on site. Can you prove it? Because there are a lot of people who aren't. And that's one thing we do have to be honest about, Victor. There are people who have not been able to convert this. And so can you prove that you're just as good live virtually as you are live on site?
Have your expertise, prove that you can bring those expertise and create a transformation live and live virtual. It is absolutely amazing. Awesome. We've had such amazing insights behind the scenes. So I really, really appreciate you for being able to pull the curtain back and show us, I guess, not only how you convey a message, but also a lot of the inner workings of how you make it work as a speaker. So I want to thank you and welcome you to Speaker Nation. But if people want to find out more about your paid speaker accelerator, or they're wanting to find out more about you or see more about the Center of Respect, where can they go or what can they do?
Yeah, there's really two options. One is paid speaker accelerator. So just like it sounds, we're going to help you accelerate your paid speaking profession, your career. So paid speaker accelerator, that's where I help speakers do exactly what we just said. Accelerate, dramatically shorten your learning curve. I hold nothing back. We have very high-end monthly coaching programs with small group one-on-ones where we really, really people who really want to take this to another level. But sometimes we also have workshops where it's a 3-hour workshop. You can jump in and get these 3 skill sets. So there's a wide variety in there. We do one-on-ones where people hire me for a full day of just working with them. So that's the paid speaker accelerator. If they want to see what I do, what I get paid to do by clients on the expertise side of what got us to the paid speaker accelerator, that is Center for Respect. And all they would do is go to centerforrespect.com. Centerforrespect.com, super easy to find. And as you saw, you were on the website. It's very easy to go around and see the different markets we work with, the problems we help solve, and the skills we teach. Those are the best ways to get a hold of me. If they're trying to find me on social media, it's Mike Respects, plural, Mike Respects. Nobody can spell my name. You've seen it, Victor, you know.
So no one can spell mine either. That's brilliant. Well, I'll link all of that in the show notes at publicspeakingblueprint.com. Look, it's been absolutely brilliant. I've really enjoyed this myself. I've got some things that I'm going to add into my own arsenal. And I look forward and highly recommend people go out and check out what you're up to.
Well, thank you. And the last thing I would share with everybody is, if you're mission focused, you're going to make the right choices through any transition you're in. If you're only dollar focused, you could make a lot of errors in this journey, a lot more errors. We're always going to make errors, but you can make a lot more that could do harm and or hurt your image and your reputation versus being mission-based. So are you solving problems for people? Do you care about the problems you're solving for your clients and the audience? And that's really what I love to leave it on, because Victor, I can see you are mission-focused, mission-based, and it's awesome when people are. So thank you for engaging in such a great conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.